Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Good. Good.
Summertime. Good. You cut out there for a second.
Oh.
Say that one more time.
I said I'm very good. It's summertime. The weather is exquisite. Farming is fabulous. Life is just almost
great.
Too good to be believed.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Yep. And I have an announcement here.
All right.
Our next virtual Zen Cooks Vegetarian Cooking Workshop on Sunday, July 26th, will feature an exploration of Indian flavors and cooking techniques in the mindful preparation of dal, cumin rice, and cucumber raita. Sign up by Friday, July 24th. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. Conversation on one topic, please, is great, about 5 minutes in length. And if you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry tonight, please press *6 and then 1 to make that show.
Cannot wait for that cooking class. You know, those classes, as you know, because I know you've been doing them too, each one has been just so fun. And
yes.
And so fun to come up with something new to be able to make. It's just, and the,
yes.
You know, all the tips and the cooks are just doing such a great job. And,
if
somebody hasn't joined in, you will not be sorry. And besides which, when you get finished with the workshop, you have a meal. I mean, how many workshops you get finished and you have something ready for you to eat? Come on.
I know. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get our first caller on here. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. This is Debbie from Minnesota.
Debbie. Hello.
Hi, Sherry. Well, I think tonight I really am speaking as being interviewed, so do I take this call with you or not?
Whoa, I didn't quite track that.
Well, I'm being interviewed for,
I got you. No, those are separate issues.
That's
no.
What you said last time.
Oh, good.
But I don't want to repeat what I'm going to talk about, but I guess, I don't know what you're going to tell me this time. I wanted to say that I'm, that your guidance for me with regard to the content of my daughter and her, OCD is just right, in terms of my looking to myself and parent. You said I was parenting the wrong child, and I was like, oh, yes. So that is great, and it's good to see, and I keep seeing it. There's nothing like definitive for me to do. I'm registering my gratitude for that direction. Still living in the I don't know day to day.
Not to take away from what you're offering us right now, but just to underline the fact that that encouragement is true for all of us all the time.
Right.
Whatever we've got going about somebody else is our issue.
Right.
I mean, that's just how it is, right? So with a child and parenting, that kind of, I'm looking in the wrong place for this. There's a child who needs to be, But whatever it is that's going on for us, if we bring it back in that way and take care of the part of us who is struggling instead of believing that, the cause of our suffering is out there somewhere, we're just always going to be going in the right direction.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, what does that look like? What is, you know, to
yeah exactly.
So moment to moment, you know, I wish I remember saying when I left the call with you, I said to you, oh, I wish you could just hold my hand. Wait, I don't know what to do. And so I started holding my own hand under the table when I was with her. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I know that would be good. But, yeah, it still is like then still living in the I don't know and watching myself get triggered and not know what to do. So that's kind of where I'm living, which is, I guess, a good place for awareness practice.
Oh, it's an excellent place. In fact, there's no giving anything away, but Ashwini and I were just in a conversation about from a project that we're doing about being triggered and what that is, what that means, what happens with that. And the thing that, and whoever's in the thing, you know, they'll hear me repeat this, but the whole point of awareness practice is getting triggered.
Great. Yeah. I'm just in the right, I'm having
you're
the right life
exactly,
then.
You're in exactly right. The right place, because what we want to do is get past what makes us suffer.
Right.
So if we're not doing that, then we're just in a holding pattern, you know, just hoping, nothing goes bad, hoping that, you know, it's like the t-shirt, I don't want to tiptoe through life just to arrive safely at death. But that's what almost everybody's doing, just tiptoeing along.
Oh, yeah,
along,
I would say that's
hoping,
my tendency, definitely.
Yeah, hoping nothing.
And I love it. Right?
Yeah, and
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no, there's no freedom. There's no peace. There's no enjoyment. You can't not be stressful, however many negatives I had there. But if we're trying to play it safe, we are always going to be stressful and we are always going to suffer. It's just how it is. You know, I didn't make up these rules. Anybody who's been paying attention to life for any length of time knows that that's true.
I don't know what to say to that. Goody?
Yeah, well, and...
Great.
And, right. And, well,
good to know.
But you're in the right place, though.
I'm in the
right
place.
Because you don't know. So in
I don't
every
know.
Moment,
I really don't
you,
know.
You know,
right.
You get triggered, and you stop, and you look at that, and you see what's going on for you, and you gain an understanding about that. Maybe it's a fear. Maybe it's a dread. Maybe it's a feeling of overwhelm or confusion or whatever it is. And you see that, and you realize, oh, that's what's triggering me, not the external circumstances.
Terror.
So now this is something that I can deal with. And once I deal with it, I'm on the other side of it.
I feel like I'm not going to be on the other side of it until Lillian leaves the house. But that's very literal. Like, okay, I know what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
until I have a different orientation towards this content.
But you don't know that. And that I that you were just referencing a minute ago really would like you to believe that, because that gives you, what, at least 5 more years of suffering.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's not necessary.
Okay.
It's really not necessary. You're bringing too much conscious awareness to it.
So that it will not be necessary. In fact, it will not be happening. That's what you're saying.
That's
if
exactly
I bring more
what
awareness
I'm saying.
To it.
That is exactly
but
what
just
I'm
keep
saying.
My awareness close to home.
That's
not
exactly
on her.
Not on
and
her.
And what we're going to do in a situation
that's
that seems
right.
untenable. Right.
That's right. That is exactly right. That is exactly right. Because when our attention is on something out there, we're just hopeless. We're just, you know, I mean, and you know that.
I do know that.
You know, yeah, you know, oh, God, I hope that doesn't happen. Oh, God, I hope she does that. Oh, no, what if that?
Or even this is the answer. Oh, yeah, this is the answer. Great, goody, you know, like.
Yeah, oops, it wasn't.
Right.
Darn.
Right.
Darn. And, you know, Debbie, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm the kind of odd person who looks at a lot. But, you know, I mean, just in Sangha, you hear people talking all the time about essentially getting either they lose somebody that they love, they lose something that they love, they have a really scary, possibly terminal diagnosis, right? And there's nothing to be done. There's no fixing it, right? There's no changing it. There's no hoping that it's going to be different or better. There's just accepting it, facing it, and learning to be all right with how it is.
Right.
And it's true for all of us. I mean, you know, in the big picture, you're what we would call relatively young, right? But one day, and we don't know when that day will be, you're going to lose somebody that you love. You're going to face your own mortality. There'll be some kind of circumstance that you just don't have any choice about.
I'm sort of in a situation like that. I don't have any choice about this one. But yes, yes.
But you do.
Yeah.
But you do. You do have a choice about it. That's the whole point.
Okay, right. All right. So I don't have any choice about the fact that I'm going to die or the fact
that
there is this situation in my household. But I have a choice about it in the way that we're talking about.
That's right, about how you are with it. And that's, you know, that's, again, that's what people are doing all the time is negotiating, you know, trying to postpone it, hoping it doesn't happen today, but, you know, it's like people learn CPR and fire safety and, you know, all of these kinds of things because they know something could happen and you want to be ready. Well, this is our way to get ready. Be all right in this moment with whatever is happening in this moment.
Right.
And then we're ready. We know that we're going to be all right no matter what.
Right. There's just this belief as a parent that you can and should affect things.
Yeah. Well, see, that's all behind me. So I have the experience to be philosophical. Yeah. No.
And have the perspective of having been there.
That's exactly right. And and to know that, no, you can do the very best that you can do and you have no idea how it's going to go. None. And yet that belief that people have, then if it doesn't go well for their child, if something awful happens, then it's their fault. No, it's not. No, it's not. Yeah, in the same way that when things happen to us that we don't want to have happen, everybody's trained to believe there's something wrong with them. They've done something wrong. They're being punished. It's their fault. No, that is not true.
It's just how it is.
Just how it is. Now, you know my take on it. The thing that we can always choose is unconditional love.
Mm.
And if we do, then we can know that that's the very best that we can do. That's the very best that we can do. So with your daughter, when you first of all have unconditional love for you, when you really let go of all those it's my fault, it's my responsibility, I should, I can, if I don't. When you see through all of that, you see it for the lie that it is, okay? And then you hold that unconditional love for her. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what her journey is. You hold her in unconditional love. That's it. That's the best you can do. Mm-hmm. And if it turns out that all of this is something that she outgrows, you know, and she goes on to be a Rhodes Scholar and President of the United States, or God help us all, whatever she would like to be and do, you know, you can also know, wow, that's a miracle. Really has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me.
Yes, that's
all
true.
All I did
right.
was love her, and that was
right.
my pleasure.
Right.
That was my joy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Gosho, Sherry.
You've got this,
Thank
Mom.
You. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Gosho.
Gosho.
Debbie and Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. This is David from Chicago.
Hey, David.
Hi there. I have not called in a very long time.
Yeah.
I'm paying attention to and following along with Best Shape Possible.
Oh, lovely.
But I'm calling now because my issue feels bigger than Best Shape Possible. And that's like this chronic dysregulation that I keep finding myself in. And, you know, you were just talking about a kind of terminal, you know, illness situation, and it almost feels like that. It almost feels like that.
Well, tell me what happens, David. What does all that mean? I'm so leery of labels, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I do get triggered. You used the word triggered earlier. I get triggered into the sympathetic nervous system state, and I am... It overwhelms my body. It overwhelms my system, and I try to practice awareness with it, of course. And,
well, tell me, David, tell me what it feels like, because those are like, you know, I ask people how they feel, and they'll say, well, I'm depressed, or, you know, and it's like, no, that's a thought. So what does it feel like when that happens, and how does it feel overwhelming?
My body's energy is activated, and so it's kind of like a lot of anxiety or some kind of a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of inability to really think well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this, like, there can be like a flooding of a variety of emotions. And I think that's just a counterpart of the whole physiological process.
Mm-hmm. So when you get all of that, does it feel like adrenaline shooting through your body?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And so when that happens, it's followed by a bunch of emotions, right? So overwhelm, what
yeah.
that feeling. And is there fear? Is there, you said anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
Is there?
Yeah. Yes, fear as well.
Yeah. And because does it feel like you're going to die?
Yeah, it does feel very strong, and my perception of the world like narrows, and it's as if I'm not like what I have to do is respond, and I have to respond in these ways that like feel better.
What, such
short
as?
Term. Well, a big one is where I go, I leave the house and I get on my bike and I ride to Starbucks and I just hang out at Starbucks for a while, which changes my context, changes everything. And so like I'll write, I'll read, I'll listen to something, I'll do something else.
So you're saying that you escape.
Yeah, it's an escape process. Yeah.
Yeah, you try to run away from it. And yet, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because you could do all that at home.
Correct.
It to riding your bike? Is that, I mean, is it a long ways to Starbucks and you use a lot of that energy in the physical movement of getting to Starbucks?
Yeah, it's about a mile and a half or 2 miles. And that helps, I think, expend some of that energy.
Mm-hmm. So what would happen if you were to just run in place when it starts to happen? You see, I'm curious about, does it start physically or does it start mentally or emotionally? Do you have a sense of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of just physical, like an embodied kind of triggering. So I would say less on the mental side as far as the initiation.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like an implicit memory. I mean, come from the body, but and maybe even procedural memory. So it's like that process is like in my system, so it picks it up in the morning, usually when cortisol is high enough, and it just like starts going. It starts getting me into that fear place. It creates the story. I can tell that the story is next.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I don't know if we've ever talked about this or if you've ever heard me talk about this, but years ago, I had a panic attack. Okay, I could have told you why I had the panic attack, right? That there were reasons that I had the panic attack, right? But
okay.
The point is, I had a panic attack, and I realized that the one thing that I could do to help this was to go over my finances. Okay, so I was very poor, had a child, didn't have enough money, didn't know where money was going to come from, blah, de, blah, de, blah, de, blah. And so if I would go over my finances and prove to myself that I was going to be all right, there's going to be money for food, then I'd be okay. Okay. But at a certain point, and this was way actually before awareness practice, but I decided that what I wanted to do is to actually see what was happening with me. And so I lay down on the floor, and I made my body into an X, and I just lay there while the panic attack happened. And I just watched where the sensations moved through my body, and, this was pre-awareness practice, but probably exactly what somebody would have told me if I'd had somebody to ask about it, right? To tell me to do that. And so I watched it, and it eventually dissipated. And then I realized that I had a fear that was going to happen again, right? And so the next time it happened, because it did happen, I could feel the sensation starting. I just did the same thing. That was my last one. Because
mm-hmm.
there was nothing maintaining it. Right? I no longer had a fear of it because I knew what would happen. I knew what to do to be all right with it. I knew that it would pass I knew it didn't mean anything. I knew I wasn't going to die, which is what I thought the first time, right? And so that's my encouragement to you. Instead of getting into all of the what it means and why and fancy psychological labels for it, to just simply, when it, the next time it happens to you, just lie down on the floor and watch it. So there's an old Zen story about the, sorry if you know this one, but about the gal who suddenly was covered with snakes, right? Her whole body was covered with snakes. And you can imagine, she was a bit hysterical with the whole proposition. And so they called the doctor, and the doctor said, we could sedate her, I suppose, or we could put her. But, she had snakes all over. So they called the psychologist who came and said, well, we could do this, we could do that, but, you know. And so guess who they called next? You're right, the Zen master. And the Zen master said, okay, here's what you do. You go in your room, and you stay in there, and you watch those snakes. You watch them until you know everything that there is to know about them. Right? You don't talk to anybody about them. You don't even talk to yourself about them. You just get to know those snakes, everything about them. How long, what color, what their eyes look like, where are they exactly. You watch everything about them. And the next time they checked in, the snakes were gone. The whole point being, nothing can maintain itself under scrutiny. And the reason that we suffer with things is because we're afraid to stay with them, and so our fear is the thing that drives the very thing that we're afraid of. That's my best encouragement, David.
Yeah, and not bring in other stories.
That's exactly right. Because they will be there.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, as soon as the mind gets hold of it. In fact, on the year-long retreat, somebody talked about how waking up in the morning and then watching the whole thing start. And this is, people talk about waking up into conditioning. And there's that brief little few seconds, and then here it comes. Here comes the stories. Here comes the, and they're usually gloom and doom, and they're dread and their anxiety and their pressure and their all of these things that kick in, and we are trained to react to them and to basically to allow them to control us. And when we decide that we're not going to do that, when we decide that we're just going to stay through it, pay attention to it, watch it really closely without believing it or making it mean anything, It has no legs. It doesn't actually exist. It feels like it, but it doesn't. Let me know, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll take some guts, and it might not go all that well. But if you just realize these are only sensations. Sensations can't do anything to us. They're just sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you will let me know, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Thank
Good
you.
Good job. Thank you, David. Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, David. And I really enjoyed that conversation, Sherry. And I noticed the same thing happening like in meetings at work where I'm really present, I'm engaged, and then I come out of the meeting and then it's like the download, the conditioned download of like, oh, remember that story and remember that issue. And then, it's totally visible to me. I can totally see it happening.
Yes. Yeah. You can see it happening. You can feel the feelings. Right, you know what you're, you know how you're supposed to react to it, you know what's supposed to, and And when we know it that intimately, we also know that we don't have to go along with any of it, that in fact mm-hmm. we can turn attention away from it and redirect our attention, and then there's nothing maintaining it. If we're not feeding it, it's going to wither and die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alrighty. So, Sherry, it's time for Good News Update, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers. And, Sherry, your phone cuts out a little bit for me consistently, so I don't know if you maybe want to call back in and see if that helps a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to do that. Before Good News Update, I'm going to be fast, okay?
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hi, this is Debbie from Minnesota.
Hey, Debbie. And Jen, Debbie's now live, and I'll turn it over to you for a Good News Update.
All right, wonderful. Yes, and thanks for joining us, Debbie, today to talk about your experience of turning to life in challenging times.
Yeah.
Got a wonderful preview.
Yeah, basically it's just, it's that, right?
Yeah.
And I think... I've been so scared for like such a long time with this content, 6 or 7 months. And I just remember I was coming home from my college reunion, and I was listening to this great teacher teach about the Bhagavad Gita, and he called the chapter that sets up the story, like the backdrop for the learning that happens in that book. With chapter 2, it's usually called like Arjuna's sorrow, the main character's sorrow. And he called it the yoga of depression. And he said that, you know, in each chapter is like the yoga of, meaning a path of transformation or healing. And and he said that that it's the depression is an avenue, and I don't feel depressed with this content, but depression meaning maybe even just depression, like something's not working in a place where you have a strong sense of identity and you're pulling away from it, or, you know, struggling with it, having a lot of resistance. And and he said that it becomes a path of yoga when you finally just, in this case it does it so for the main character, when you just throw up your hands and you just say, God, I don't know what to do. And that's what happened the night I was listening. I was like, yes, that's exactly it. God, I don't know what to do. And that night, like, I came home, and I got this really long text from a friend. And it was exactly what I needed to hear. It could have been Sherry. Like, it was really, like, I mean, it was spot on in terms of understanding a person's adequate to their experience. She didn't use, that's our language, but... And that, you know, just only provide what's uplifting and encouraging. Like, that's the only weight that, in this case, my daughter could carry. And, like, it was a great direction for me. I'm not saying that, but it felt like I had asked for God for help, and it landed in my lap. And the next morning, I got unmuted on the radio show, first person, with Sherry. And look, and then I kind of, you know... With the content and how things are unraveling, I got to this point again where, like, last night I was with Dan. I was like, Dan, I don't know. We can't reach we can't meet with the therapist. We don't know what to do in this situation. I'm like, God, I'm back to I don't know. And boom, I get another long text from my friend that was just right. And then I got unmuted by Sherry. And I'm just saying, like, just really, like, it's almost, it would make one religious to use Sherry's way turn of phrase, every time I ask for help,
it's there. Yeah. Well, and you know, Debbie, the thing that about it that strikes me so much in hearing you talk about it, having heard you talk about it, is that place where it feels like, as awareness practitioners, what happens for us is we're available for those messages, for life to to find us in those times where I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, it's easy to realize once you're sort of aware of that and you see that coming in, my gosh, life is taking care of us exquisitely all the time. But if we're lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we're not porous to that. We're not available to that. We don't see that support that we're surrounded by. And so what you're describing is you're in a really challenging situation in your life. And that willingness to let go, you use the word identity, which seems so spot on. You realize there's an identity there. But what's so tricky is that so often what happens for us is that another identity is going to come in to do something about that identity, right? But that place that you're describing of, I don't know. I mean, you know, I really don't know. And then there's life coming in with all the support that you need, in the words that you need it, in the moment that you need it. And right. You're available to receive that.
Right. And, you know, it's also interesting because, like, neither Sherry nor this friend of mine, this college friend of mine, like, even when the college friend tried to give me practical, like, you could do these things, there are certain reasons where, yes, I would love to do those things, but they are not a now step. They're a direction for where we might ultimately go, but they're not, we can't actualize them now. So I can't, like, say, okay, now I know right. from what Sherry told me or from what my friend told me.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, got it, and now I know. It's not bringing to me to I know. It's not.
That's right.
It's not. And the therapist isn't available, right? So we don't have an I know.
That's a gift, isn't it? It just like the conversation you had with Sherry earlier, that place of, boy, this is actually the best place to be, you know, because we want those buttons to be pushed. If what we're, and I'm not talking about on the content level, that's a stretch, at least for me it is. And when I'm in a really challenging content place, I don't tend to get to a place of like, oh, I love this. This is exactly what I would choose, right? No. But that place of, boy, this really is stirring up the things that, especially as awareness practitioners and people who have practiced for a while, when we realize it, we see this is not the first time this process has caused me suffering in my life, right? This has been around. But this is a golden opportunity for me to have that, all the practice that's come before in my practice that comes to bear in this moment, all the support that's around me in Sangha, in life, to say, okay, this is a perfect moment for me to practice with this and to let this suffering wear away. As we, you know, the title of one of Sherry's books, suffering is optional. And it doesn't feel optional until we get to this place where we realize the suffering is the process that's being added onto this situation. It's possible not to suffer in this situation. That can feel like crazy, but how is that so in this moment? And it feels like, you know, like you just described a moment ago, you get to that place of, okay, yeah, that's a great suggestion. I can't actualize that now, so I can't go to a place of I know, which maybe you would do if it was like, oh, yeah, great idea. Okay, that's going to fix it, right? Then you could go to that conditioned place of I know, but you can't. So you're left in that place of I don't know, and so you're invited to keep practicing with it.
You know what's dropping in, Jen, is just, like I've been working with this condition, it's an autoimmune condition, and you know, it became very clear to me, I don't know, three or so years ago, maybe four, when I went to a rheumatologist, and there was nothing they were going to be able to do. Like there was no action step. There was nothing to do. And in all this time, I've been following my nose, and the healing has been unbelievable. And I always see, like, and I mean, I don't know, but I know. And, like, if I take that experience, which has been so faith-affirming, like, watching this heal, it's like watching a slow-motion miracle. But it's, like,
beautiful.
Step-by-step knowing, like, I just seeing what's happening. I can't tell you
Yeah.
But if that will be the way this will go, with it seems harder, actually. That seems easier because it's just me and my body. It just seems closer in. I have more agency. I have no agency over my daughter. How anything goes.
And
I have agency
really
over me. Oh, I guess it's not the same. Sherry said it's not the same.
If we want to get really religious about it, Debbie, so you had that, you're having that slow motion miracle. Great. Ready for the next level. Here's the next level.
It does feel like that because now it's on the emotional plane. Because if I don't look to Lillian and say, oh, I don't have as much control, that's not true. Like what Sherry was saying and what is so is I have, it's me, but it's now on an emotional plane instead of physical. It feels like the next level.
Next level. And there's the gratitude. Wow, so life will not give up on me. Life is going to take me through this curriculum until it's all seen, all embraced in unconditional love. Exquisite. Amazing.
The yoga of depression.
What's that?
The yoga of depression.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe we're already at time, but thank you for being here this afternoon to explore it. It's really, I mean, I know I'm plugging my own content in. I think we all can. You know, that process that you're describing is just so, so helpful when we get to a place that just feels that challenging. So thank you for being with us to talk about
it. Oh, Jen, thanks for having me. How lucky I am tonight, really. Like, boy. Basho.
Basho. So happy, Debbie.
You too.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Debbie. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And that was fabulous.
It's so inspiring. You know, the people's life circumstances and how courageously they approach it and how honestly, how honest they are with it, how vulnerable. And allowing all of us into that process, and then as Jen said, you know, we're all applying it to ourselves, it's a tremendous gift.
Yes, indeed.
It's the gift of sangha.
Gift of sangha.
Wow.
And here's another gift of sangha, which is our next caller, Sherry.
All right, thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, this is Lucinda.
Hey, Lucinda.
Hi. I'm so relating and you know, feeling inspired by all this.
Yes,
but here's the same thing on a different level is I fell off my bike. And
no.
Yes.
You just watched your husband fall off of his bike.
Yes, that's right.
What, you thought it was a good idea? It looked like fun?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I fell off my bike, and watching that process of the immediate feeling and it was so interesting how much, you know, the role of events, you know, I was feeling fine before. So there's a definite beginning and then there's a, you know, script in a way. But what I've noticed is I felt compassion for her who was whining and moaning and crying on the ground, you know, and no, and I could, what we just heard about holding your own hand, that's kind of what I kept, I was drawn to doing. I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm here, I'm okay. And I had to ride my bike, this is in the badass category, I had to ride my bike back to the car. And I have a broken arm.
Oh, my God, Lucinda.
I know. Well, I was way up in the boonies, and there's no cell reception, and there's no, you know, my husband said, well, I'll go get the car And I didn't want to be alone, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Don't leave me alone. So, and that was another manifestation of needing to be there for myself. You know, he didn't leave me, for one thing. He didn't leave. But
even though he wanted to, because it would have been faster and he wouldn't have to be panicked about you and what's happening with your arm and are you going to fall off and break the other one and how are you going to use your brakes when you're all of those it's not a good ride for him either.
No, and the hospital and the people are so fabulous. They're all so the doctor came at the ER and she said, "What trail were you on?" And were you at the Nordic Center? And I said, "Yes." And she said, "What trail were you on?" So this is a person who knows exactly what I was doing. I told her the name of the trail and she said, "Oh yeah, I know what you mean."
You said, "No, you don't, because you haven't fallen off and broken your arm. You only know the trail." Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but I see how the difference between the pain or the physical stuff and the suffering.
Yeah.
I'm still traumatized.
Oh yeah.
And and so I have tools, you know, I know what to do. And yet I'm still traumatized. So that feeling just to be with.
Yeah. And is it one of those where you close your eyes and you can, and it kind of replays again?
Yeah, kind of like that. There's a lot of, I didn't lose consciousness, but there's a lot of blank, you know, you're riding along and then you're on the ground. So I can play through what happened from that point, but between being up on my bike and being down on the ground is not available.
Which is probably good.
Because
the reason I'm asking about that is because it is such a practice place. You probably remember that. It's just a year ago, I guess, when I broke my leg.
Oh yeah.
That there was same thing. It was in an accident. You know, if I closed my eyes, I could feel this. You know, going through that same process of what happened to the leg and how close it was to, you know, how bad it could have been. That kind of thing. And and just getting to that place of saying I have skills here, you know. I can redirect my attention. I don't need to do that. That's not going to help anybody to do that. And so to be in that place of, as you're saying, to not indulge that, which would be a temptation, but to stay with the person who would not be helped by that kind of thing.
Yes, and No, as a kid, I broke my arm. I don't remember which one. And that was the person whose hand I was holding. Because, you know, it wasn't horrible. I had a loving environment. I was, you know, everything was in place to support me and all that. But she was terrified. It might have been where my fear of doctors came from or something. Who knows?
And especially as a kid, I was just talking with somebody about that, and the whole process of being in an emergency room, and everything takes long, and everybody knows what's going on, but you don't know what's going on. You don't know what any of this means. Be with her and to see how all of that can so quickly get activated.
Yes. So quickly. Yes.
So I have this curiosity though, but where in your arm? What is broken?
I chipped my elbow.
Oh, your elbow.
It helped my head not hit the ground. yeah. hard.
Thank you, Elbow.
You know?
Yeah, thank you, Elbow.
Yeah, and the rumor is that it's not a, there's no surgery in my future, but yes. I haven't seen the orthopedic doctor yet. But they say for something like this, they don't do anything.
That, oh, wow. You know, just bandage you up and
yes.
off you go. Wow.
Yes.
So this means you can still meditate.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You can still yeah, say yeah. go on retreat.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's my hope. I haven't seen the doctor who's the ultimate, you know, authority.
Authority. Mm-hmm.
but I'm hopeful.
Good.
And I will
good.
Let you know.
Good. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned a great new appreciation actually for those very doctors, because that was one of the ones who said, who examined my broken leg and said, "We're sending you over for ultrasounds because I think you have a blood clot." And so you know, he has a very special place in my heart forever. And you know, just a deep respect for these folks and all that they're able to bring to us.
And also, your sharing of that experience really helped me be more centered.
Yeah, equanimous,
with my with anything I hear coming from a doctor.
Uh-huh.
Instead of, oh no, it's terrible, it's going to be terrible, it is terrible,
right.
It doesn't matter what they say.
Yeah, that's
no.
right. That's yeah. right.
Yeah.
yeah.
And
so
it really helped me.
Taking full responsibility for ourselves and being open to all of the information anybody can give us. Right.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you yeah. so much.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just so glad that, boy, and there your husband went off and he just tumbled around and got back up on his bike, no problem. And that was traumatic, right?
Yes.
And then you had to outdo him, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. That's what yeah. he's complaining about. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so glad to hear that you're on the mend and going to be okay.
Yes. Yes. Thanks,
right.
Sherry.
Thank you,
yeah.
Lucinda.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Thanks for joining us, Lucinda. And Sherry, we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Laura calling from Montreal.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. What an amazing show this has been. I've just been, well, going through a whole gamut of emotions as I've been listening to Sangha, and yeah,
and
it's been
isn't
wonderful.
That so often the case? I mean, whatever we've got going on, you know, we know that there's just this whole slew of people, and of course, it's just our Sangha, right? We know Sangha is as big as the world, and all
yes.
of the kinds of things that people are going through and how they're doing it, and the what they bring to us
mm-hmm.
with their process. It's wonderful.
Such a gift. I mean, so many gifts.
Yeah, yeah.
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 So I had this experience today, and this is an ode to practice, because it's kind of like, well, first of all, I knew it was time to do this thing that I had set up to do, and I had been kind of ignoring it, and just specifically, it was when I lived in the U.S., just before I left, I revised my will. And now I've been living in this separate country within a country, which has its own, it's not easy. Well, it's its own law. It follows the French
yeah.
law, not the English common law. And so everything is different. But
mm-hmm.
I decided I'd better update this stuff, and I'd better get a, what they call here is a mandate of protection, and it's a little bit beyond the power of attorney, and anyway, so I made this appointment to see a notary, which here is an attorney who then studies a number of years after becoming an attorney to become a notary. So
wow.
it's not like it is in the U.S., or at least in the part of the U.S. where I live. But anyway, so it was in a far part of the city, and it was, you know, traffic and blah, blah, blah. And so it occurred to me to ask if we could do it online. So we did it online, and my daughter and I were online with this wonderful notary. She was just absolutely fabulous. And then all of a sudden, my son was online with us. So he neither my daughter thought to tell me that he was going to join us. And all of a sudden, I mean, what a gift that was to see him. And how fortunate that he happens to be in Canada right now, so it's not a 12-hour time difference, right? But so we had this wonderful conversation about these two documents that I needed to do and update the will. And before this meeting, I was in dread. Like, this is one of those that would wake me up in the middle of the night, right? And so what I did this morning when I got off was, okay, I'm not giving any more time to these stories, whatever they are. They were so amorphous, I couldn't even pin them down. And so I just called forth the person who would enjoy doing this, who would bring her skills and expertise to this meeting.
Wow.
Well, and of course she showed up, and I had the most wonderful time, and I feel so confident now, and I know exactly, you know, what I need to submit, and yeah, anyway, so kudos to practice, yes.
Well, and the practitioner,
oh, yes.
Because, yep. Yeah, because there's a lot of steps in there, and that is, boy, talk about truly inspiring, and such a big part of where we are in practice now, right? That mm-hmm. Hopefully you're alerting everyone to this who hasn't been paying attention to what we're doing right now, but getting the right person for the right job, and that yes. and that we have the ability to do that.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And all you had to do was ask.
Exactly. Yes.
And you know, Laura, for me, it's really interesting. I'm just because, you know, I this stuff is so interesting to me. But so I wonder if when it dropped in to do that, did you already have the right person there for the job?
I think I did.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't...
It's the person who wasn't going to take all this amorphous stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. She had no patience for that. She was just like, let's get this job done.
Yeah.
So we did.
Well, and that it's interesting, and that it's, you know, it's not, oh, God, no, I have to. It's interesting. That, I mean, here's this, mm-hmm. this person who is beyond educated, right? And we have the ability to take advantage of her expertise in order to make this thing happen. So we don't have to wonder, is this right? Is this, you know, of course it is. Good. Then you have your two of your beloved children there with you to support you and assist you in it, and also to be informed and see how you are with this, mm-hmm. right? Which has to, I project, be a comfort to them.
Well, I know when my mom planned her funeral and bought her burial plot, you know, the little things they buy when you're cremated, mm-hmm. before she died, and she told us, you know, what songs she wanted sung at her funeral, and it was such a relief to us.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, such a kindness.
Yes.
Such a kindness. The last thing people need to wonder about, and they don't have to, your kids don't have to wonder, where are these documents? Has it been done? What did it, right? They've got it all. Then
well,
all they have to do is deal with the fact that mom is gone. Yes. Not everything else.
Yes. And I think Sherry, it was a part of that. You know, I was moving, I was downsizing, and I said to the kids, I'm doing this now so you don't have to do it when I'm gone, because mm-hmm. you don't need to deal with all of this stuff. So, and this is just another piece of that process.
And it's in terms of spiritual practice or awareness practice, it's so important. It's what we were talking about earlier, right? It's not, well, you know, I might die someday. Mm-hmm. No, I am going to die someday. So let's take care of everything that we can take care of as we go along. So mm-hmm. that, as you say, it's not just, we don't just leave a great big mess or yeah. overwhelm or confusion or whatever it is mm-hmm. for our loved ones. What a kindness.
Yeah.
And what a kindness to the person, in this case, you, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. it's facing it. It's something I don't have to wonder about or worry about. I don't
exactly.
have to wake up in the middle of the night and listen to voices about it.
Yes, yes. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for practice and for Sangha.
Oh, me too. I'm mm-hmm. me too. It's what we get to constantly, right? What in the world would we do? We don't even want to think about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Thank
well,
you
thank
so
you,
much.
Laura. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go happy.
Go happy.
Joining us, Laura, and thank you, Sherry, and
well,
thanks
thank
to
you,
everyone
Michael.
For this fabulous show.
Yeah.
My
thanks to
My
everybody.
Privilege.
All right. Well,
yeah.
then, gusho, and let's
go happy.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.